Some might argue that was a political statement, Kieran.
Welcome to Thinking Deeply About Primary Education, the podcast that makes time and space to think about pedagogy, teaching and learning, professional development, anything of interest to time-poor but enthusiasm-rich primary teachers. This week, I'm joined by Neil Almond.
Hello.
And we're going to explore what is going to be left behind when Key Stage 1 SATs are finally removed. But first, Neil, what you reading for?
Hey, what you reading for?
So going back to a paper that I'm sure many listeners will be aware of, it's that paper by Kraft and Pape from 2014, Can Professional Environments in Schools Promote Teacher Development? The reason why I went back to this is because I've kind of recently just realized how powerful Microsoft Forms can be as a sort of data gathering tool within an organization. I was interested, how did Kraft and Pape like come up with how they realized what a good professional environment is? Because this is that kind of famous graph where if you're in a school that has a strong professional environment as teachers, your contribution to pupils' math score, you know, far outweighs those that either don't have this kind of culture at all, or like worse than that is that the culture is rubbish. So I read it, and then I kind of had a look at it was kind of a bit of a close read of it, because there's lots of maths in there, which I just don't understand at all. But then I realized it said something like, oh, the questions that we asked can be found in Appendix A on like the online thing. And I try as I might, I could not find Appendix A online. Matthew Kraft's email was there, so I emailed Matthew Kraft to say, I'm trying to find this. I'm probably being really stupid here, but if you could like tell me where it is, I'd really appreciate that. And actually, he got back to me. Well, I sent the email off, and then I got like an immediate bounce back saying I'm on sabbatical. I was like, oh, great. Okay, well, this is going to take a while. But then this morning, early afternoon, he emailed me back with the questions that they used for to work out what constitutes these professional environments and the scales and all that stuff. So I've asked our kind of director of primary education if he's feeling brave, maybe on September, this might be something he wants to do across the whole trust, just to kind of, you know, have a look and see what's actually going on and what's it like out there. Because it's will be an interesting bit of knowledge gathering, I think. What about you, Kieran? What are you reading for?
Nice. That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, big fan of that paper. And the fact that he got back to you while on sabbatical is amazing. So thank you very much, Matthew. Did you ask him to come on the podcast?
No, but I haven't replied saying thank you yet. So in that reply, I will link him up.
Send him a QR code.
Yeah.
Since you've got some free time on your hands now.
Exactly. Yeah, you don't seem to be doing much. So
nice. I have been reading, well, it's a blog post by Alex Quigley, and it's from February this year, called 5 Free Research Reads on ... Retrieval Practice.
Sounds like a Sunday 5 to me. Sounds like he's, taking his inspiration there from someone.
Is he infringing on your copyright? Maybe I'll have to take this out.
Hardly.
But it's a great selection. I mean, you've got papers from Agarwal et al. You've got Lu Yu, Vadillo and Shanks, that's testing boost classroom learning. Mm-hmm. What else we got? We got optimal learning strategy depends on learning goals, processes. I think that was retrieval practice versus worked examples. I'm not going to list all the names of the papers. And then you've got the Lyle et al. One about spacing and mathematics knowledge. And yeah, basically, if you want to engage with research, I mean, I was doing a talk today for teachers in Australia, and we were trying to sort of look at how to be evidence informed. And I think this is definitely a place that they might want to visit, and probably any teacher who's dipping their toe into the world of education research. Yeah, well worth checking out, and always good when the research is freely available too.
Absolutely.
So this week, we're going to explore what is for us a watershed moment, something that we've been calling for a long time. I mean, it's the kind of thing that if we had a producer on this show, they could go back and find all the times that we've mentioned this before, because I'm pretty sure you first mentioned it during the first quiz episode. The removal of Key Stage 1 SATs is finally upon us. For anyone who's not up to speed, what's going on, Neil?
I think since SATs were ever introduced in England, they've always been done kind of at, well, it used to be at every kind of, well, the first three key stages. So one at Key Stage 1, one at Key Stage 2, one at Key Stage 3. They got rid of Key Stage 3 a while ago. I'm not sure the exact date. Key Stage 2 is still there. And now, since the introduction of the reception baseline, they're now finally, after I think a year or two delay because of COVID, getting rid of the statutory assessments that happen at Key Stage 1. Crucially, that also means, and I wasn't sure about this until only kind of really a couple of months ago, whether the moderation aspect would still happen, because initially I thought, oh, what's going to happen is that they'll make the SATs part optional, but they'll still send local authority moderators around to, make sure that our teacher assessment against the teacher assessment framework for Key Stage 1 is accurate, but no, moderation is going as well. And so it really does kind of present a rare opportunity, I think, given that, you know, this isn't like a seismic event in terms of a brand new policy announcement. This is kind of something that's been on the radar for a while now, and now it's kind of finally here, because schools, particularly academies over local authority schools, they can now make changes that means that the curriculums that they put in front of those children are better suited to the children, and not about getting them to an arbitrary stage before they sit this, you know, relatively high accountability assessment that happens at the end of year two. So interesting times.
Nothing will be left at all.
Nothing.
They're just going to take it away. I mean, how long were you teaching the last time this happened and they took away levels and left nothing in its place? Were you in?
And then we just reinvented levels, didn't we? Again, we just called it working towards plus and all of that kind of thing. I mean, they're still, what's quite interesting is that they are still, the STA are still going to be produce papers every year, but their use is going to be completely optional. Now, I can kind of see, you know, two ways that this goes, possibly three. One is that for some schools, just carries on as normal. Nothing changes completely. Either head teachers, MATS CEOs, whoever can make those kind of decisions, just say, oh, we need something to measure pupil progress, whatever that may mean. So let's just carry on, boom, with these SATs. There'll be some schools where the only change is that actually now we don't have to give away a bit of curriculum time towards, SATs preparation. And I don't mean that in terms of drilling pupils and, you know, going off curriculum, but you know, these are 7-8 year olds at the end of the day. So things like, how do we turn our page over properly? How do we actually make sure our answers are in the right box? And yeah, you know, that, you know, the kind of things that is just good practice when it came to doing the SATs at that age. And then what I'm hoping, and what I'm definitely an advocate for, is this kind of third option where we decide, yeah, we're not going to do the SATs at all, but being in an academy, can we be a little bit clever in terms of the curriculum freedoms that are afforded to us about how we can shape curricula of certain subjects where certainly sort of what's been taught and the content has definitely been put in place because, or has been inescapable because of the this key stage one checkpoint. And so now I feel like is a wonderful time where perhaps we've talked about on the podcast before, if we don't teach them how to tell the time to the nearest 5 minutes by the time they're 8 years old. Okay, well, actually, if we don't do that, you know, this affords us a little bit more time to do the things that we think will make a difference.
We didn't follow the English National Curriculum in my previous school. And despite the fact that we knew that when we started in year one at Christmas time and we ended it February of year six, we knew the pupils would cover the things we felt were important. Come this time of year in year two, my colleagues, no matter who they were, and there were many of them, because just to staff rotation and stuff within the school, would always ask, well, what do I do about this? This, we haven't taught this. And obviously my answer is, I don't really care, because I know, and any moderator worth their salt will know that this is all just advisory. So I'm glad that that conversation doesn't need to happen anymore. Because I think, you know, we're going to focus on maths, I think, in this episode.
Yeah.
And then we'll visit, because I think there's, you know, there's enough for a couple of episodes. And then maybe even some follow-up if people listen and think, actually, I've got some ideas. You know, because we have lots of school leaders and Key Stage 1 teachers who might have opinions themselves. But I'm really looking, this is a blank slate that we've got. And, you know, we have been saying for a long time that even the curriculum itself is advisory, you know, because if you can get through those checkpoints, then you can basically free to do whatever you want. You know, I know it's not officially advisory, but you could not teach time and still be considered to be working at the expected standard, in much the same way that most schools don't get right at teaching algebra and Key Stage 2.
Absolutely.
But pupils are still considered to be working at the expected standard. I mean, you sort of started to mention options there, Neil. What options do you think, what options do you think schools have in terms of maths and how we assess pupils, if at all?
So again, like I preface this from the pure legality side of it, easier for academies, local authorities, whilst they need to follow the national curriculum, they are allowed to change content within the key stage, but technically they shouldn't place content out of that key stage into another key stage. So anything in key stage one, you couldn't say if you worked in a local authority school, you need to go and put this in a key stage two. Now, realistically, how bothered would an inspector really know that? Would anyone actually ever know that? I highly doubt it, quite honestly. I don't think, with the deep dive in, you know, maths, I don't think they have that time to go through such detail with a fine tooth comb. But also, if you're getting good outcomes and everything else is right, why should that even matter? So for local authority schools, the kind of conversations that they can have is, you know, we teach fractions and this idea of fractionness in year one, you could decide to take fractions and time completely out of year one and perhaps back end that towards the end of year two now with the year two content as well, because there's not that much different between those two year groups, when, as I'm sure you know, you're fully aware that maturation period's kicked in, their understanding of number has kicked in, knowing that you don't have to teach that content, say, A, to make sure they can answer those questions in the Key Stage 1 SATs, but also if when the moderators come to that door, you know, you don't need to go and show them evidence that they can do A, B, and C with regards to fractions. So that's, I think, your kind of the local authority option. If you want to kind of be as bold as that. The other option, if you are within a mat and an academy and you have far greater curriculum freedoms, is that, you know, you could turn the whole thing on its head if you wanted to. You literally have between year one and year six to play with now. So if you wanted to just ensure that kids knew shape and number before, you know, between year one and year three, you could feasibly do that. And, you know, whatever then you else had to cover, which I think is, you know, quite exciting. I have concerns whether that will actually happen. I think because many schools use things like White Rose. I don't think White Rose are going to produce a different document that says, you know what, if you're not interested about SATs, then use this progression document. Maybe I'm wrong, maybe that's something they're planning to do, I'm not sure. Edit this bit out, obviously, but equally I'd like to see Complete Maths have that option as well, where it's like, you know, if you we can do that through the schemes aspect of it, but I would love, so you can view like the Scottish curriculum on there. I would love another one that says, if you don't want to do if you're not worried about this key stage one checkpoint, here's an alternative curriculum that means you spend a bit more time doing bits and pieces. So I don't want to say I make a bit more work for you, Kieran, but it'd be an interesting one to take back to the maths team to find out.
That's what happened when I've written stuff for the curriculum in the past. So whenever I wrote Stage Zero, I was only considering maths. I didn't consider any one state and their curriculum. So for instance, you won't find doubling and halving in Stage Zero, because I personally think that's something that should come later. I think it's part of your understanding of of number, that you're just not, you know, it just doesn't fit the sequence. Equally, what was the other thing I cut? Odd and even numbers. You know, I think there's a time and a place for that, and it's probably a couple of years later, you know, let's get our head around the fundamentals. So, you know, my track record, so to speak, would suggest that if, you know, when I get the opportunity, the, you know, it'll be the maths that comes first as opposed to the, you know, the national curriculum of one particular country, because obviously, you know, we've got customer schools in quite a lot of different countries at the moment. So it's it's very exciting. I mean, one thing I'm really interested in is whether or not schools will stop teaching the formal written algorithm now, because how many times have we said it? You know, me and Chris did a double video. Shannon was hopefully going to make it a triple video, where we all had a thing. You know, Shannon obviously reticent sometimes to get involved in these things, but you know, she's a big proponent of the idea that, well, why are you teaching that formal written method when there are so many other more efficient and effective ways to teach calculation? You know, Chris asked me about a couple episodes ago about what happens when your pupils don't know X, Y, and Z, and one of the things is we've been thinking flexibly. Do you reckon that this is the time for the formal written algorithm to disappear until, you know, year three is fine, but key stage one are totally unnecessary?
Yeah. The extreme would be, do you know what? Like, they shouldn't have to write an equation down. If they want to like draw things, absolutely fine. But I'd be so content if we just taught oral written methods. They could draw a few things down, get some 10 frames out, whatever it is that you want to do to teach them, whatever mental method that you want to teach them, and they just write the answer down on the board. I think, you know, I'm not saying I maybe would advocate that, maybe perhaps for year one I would, while we, you know, practice number formation outside of the context of trying to work out, you know, some calculations. But yeah, I can see that should go completely. There's no excuse now trying to teach kids, you know, column method for adding 21 plus 50, where, you know, it's no, they should be able to work that out in their heads quicker than they can write it down in their book, because then it just instills bad habits. And you see that all the way to year six, where it's just no real basic stuff, where if you know your mental methods and you have that flexibility, you'll be fine.
I mean, already we've got time, you know, fractions, formal written algorithms. They're all firm, you know, fan favorites of things, you know, whenever we ask, what are we going to shift out of the curriculum and stuff like that there. Do you reckon there's anything else that teachers should be aware of that needs to go at this point? You know, things are like, okay, this is our chance to get rid of this now.
Formalization of trying to do some of the measure objectives. I think they should be able to measure with a ruler. Absolutely fine. Like, yeah, within like, you know, a 30 centimeter length. Anything over that? No, because at no point in their young lives are they going to try and measure anything over a meter with like various meter sticks. At no point in their lives at school, bar perhaps if you're doing a little bit of cooking, perhaps, you know, are you going to do, you know, measure the volume of, you know, turn the tap on, put a jug under it to get the correct volume of water? You'll do that perhaps when cooking, and I think that's a great time to introduce that skill then. You know, let's do that at that point. So I think, you know, you could look at the I think you could look at that. That'd be quite an interesting place to go, I think. Because again, these things, we get the measuring equipment out and it all just kind of tends to, you know, it comes out for that 2 or 3 weeks when that unit happens, then it goes away again and they never use it again. So I think far better to kind of teach that in the context of your DT or something like that, take a lesson to be like, right, we're going to build whatever it is we need, or to make whatever it is we need 500 grams of flour. Let's practice getting those things out and doing that without having to worry necessarily about, you know, the formalization of perhaps teaching it. Because all that happens is that they just get a worksheet of, you know, a jug of water with some scales, and then they need to do that. And that's the other thing that can then go, you know, why are we teaching children what, you know, how to read scale intervals when they're 7 and 8 years old, when they don't really understand how to, you know, they can't use an number line properly to, you know, do a mental method where you might want to say just, you know, bridge to the nearest 10, for example, where they can't bridge to the nearest 10 and just realize they can skip 3. I don't think they're going to be able to work out that the intervals of 4 means that it's going up in, or the intervals of 5 mean that each smaller interval is worth 2. So I think there's a few things that we can, you know, really kind of look at, and not say not teach them, but not make it into like a formal maths lesson.
That's a really good shout. I mean, I think jumping straight into the use of actual units of measurement is something I think we do far too early in general. You know, and it's also one of reading scales and things is also one of those things that with just a little bit more maturity,
yeah,
it's actually quite a pleasant experience. Oh yeah, this like time. If you let a child gradually build up their knowledge of time outside of school, and then all of a sudden, then you sort of focus on the intricacies. When they're a bit older, it's an easier process. Whereas if you're banging away, you know, banging your head off the table with 5 and 6 year olds, you know, you're totally right, because those why are all these little lines here? What does this mean? And then you're just getting random sort of things. I mean, my youngest has been exploring weight on Tutor, mm-hmm. but it's all been the comparison,
yeah,
and it's been, you know, to a degree sans measurement, but it's like pan balances, and you've got lots of pan balances, and you're thinking, well, which of these three is the heaviest? You know, that kind of exploration of space and measures is I think much richer,
yeah,
than the formal process of measuring stuff.
Definitely,
you know, because you can learn. You know, at some point you will need to learn this, and you could probably do it very quickly. So I think you're spot on. That's a good shout. I mean, we don't mention it enough, but it's probably because geometry and measures and things often come on the back burner, don't they? You know, they get half a unit at the end of the academic year.
And I think there's a lot to be said about making sure we don't throw space out with the bathwater on this, with the bathwater on this. Obviously, when shape and space was left out of the new early learning goals, you know, the maths community were, you know, quite rightly upset because of how important shape, space is at that particular age. So I don't think I'd go as far as, yeah, we're perfectly happy for them to explore shape and the world around them, because that's something tangible that they can then go and, you know, you show the kids what a square is, they will notice squares from there on. It's something tangible in the real world that they'll use, you know, is, I imagine, for a 7-year-old a real kind of threshold concept, that this abstract lines, the connection of lines that they've been seeing has a name, and there are properties to that, etc. But I don't feel like they get the same with that formalization of measurement, with the exception, of course, of how you said it, understanding, you know, big, bigger, biggest, heavy, heavier, heaviest, and, you know, all of those superlatives. So yeah, I think that's far more beneficial for pupils of that age. Absolutely. So yeah, I'm looking forward to the complete maths rewrite of Classroom and Tutor based on all of this.
Oh dear, so much work to do. Tim comes to you and he says, Neil, what are we going to do in Key Stage 1? And then you say, right, okay, I've got a plan. What would your ideal solution be?
Number bonds within 20, check. I will quite happily die on the hill that if the government if the trade-off for getting rid of key stage one sats was a number bond check at year two, do it. I think number bond check within 20 would be one of those simple lever to press where, as you say, you know, the assessment, you know, wags the tail of what gets taught. So if that meant that teachers actually then spent so much more time just really making sure that kids were, you know, not just knew their number bonds off by heart, but, you know, had a deep conceptual understanding of how they're working them out, what mental methods that they're using, that would be so good. Be so good, because you see it with children, and not just those that you would classify as, you know, lower attaining, but I think for most children, what holds them off from loads of things, like, you know, perimeter volume, or perimeter more precisely, what holds them off from really understanding perimeter is the fact that they spend too much time thinking about how, what is the addition of all of these you know, measurements. And then the concept of perimeter just falls out of their head. They don't tie it back to perimeter. It's just now, it's just adding these four numbers up, and they lose sight very quickly of, you know, the concept that lies beneath that, because they don't know those simple facts. And so I would definitely introduce a check of addition facts within 20. And I think I've managed to convince myself on a train to from Belfast to Dublin that that should include related subtraction facts as well.
The Starship Enterprise?
The Starship Enterprise, quite right.
That's the train that goes from Belfast to Dublin, isn't it?
Yeah.
You got on Belfast?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a nice train. I mean, I haven't been on one for a little while.
It's a very nice,
when I lived there.
Very nice train. It's very, Shan and I were very impressed by the quality of comfort and leg room and space.
Nice. I mean, when that train was first introduced, I think we still had the old trains with the, you know, the pull down windows and the handle on the door.
Oh yeah.
So that was the first time I saw a train that wasn't from the 1960s.
Nice.
So yeah, it was, that's why I called the Starship Enterprise. It was like going into the future. yeah, so that's great. I mean, So you wouldn't have anything else in this place, is that what you're saying? So, I mean, because like school leaders are going to say, oh, sats are gone. What are we going to do in their place? Are we saying that we should first and foremost say to our leaders, you don't need to do anything here. Let's just make sure, let's just have the checks and balances that we have on the in the interim years in key stage two, for instance, like say, I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. The purpose of key stage one assessment was to be that baseline to measure progress between key stage one and key stage two. So, you know, the fact that school leaders were, you know, really pushing for people to be, you know, greater depth or, you know, working at the expected level, you're only shooting yourself in the foot there 4 years later. When that year group gets to year six, then the year six teacher goes, bloody hell, these kids are not where they said they were. And they've had that, because they came up to year three as working towards greater depth expected, whatever it might be. There's obviously then in whatever informal year group assessments that you have to, you know, carry on that flight path. And if you veer from the flight path, danger, danger. But we know that, you know, flight paths are silly. I think David Adawin makes an excellent case for them being absolutely nonsensical. So, I don't know. Other than it being a comfort blanket, I'm not really sure what benefits you get from it. And that might be me, and I'm very happy for anyone to say, yeah, we think it's going to be really useful because ABC, and it might well be useful. But then I think, you know, you've got to, you know, my favorite Dylan William you know, quote is, you know, sometimes you have to stop doing good things to do even better things. And I think this is a case where we could stop doing a good thing if you think it is a good thing and do an even better thing, which is far more curriculum time, far more sensible paced curriculum time, and actually focus on something that I think would make a tangible difference to outcomes throughout the school. At every single point, I think that would make a massive difference. And it may be in through 2 or 3 years' time, I'm going to be here, you know, my head and hand in my head, and, you know, say sorry it didn't work, and I'll happily say that it didn't work, but I think it's worth a try. No, when we as a profession we complain about too much testing, so the fact that some school leaders would still want to do that doesn't necessarily make sense. We complain that there's too much stuff in the maths curriculum, and what's important here is that I'm not saying we don't not teach anything that's in the curriculum. I'm just saying that if we left it later, they'd learn it far more quicker. So we don't actually spend so much time early on doing teaching them the maths that we know some will understand because for whatever reason they really understood place value already, and half the class or two-thirds of the class still really haven't understood place value. So trying to get them to switch between base 10 and base 60, probably not the best idea.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've got a chance to reduce the secretarial burden on pupils at this age.
Staff as well, your year two staff. Year two staff mark those stats. That's a lot of papers. That's two reading papers, punctuation paper, and I think two or three maths papers. So, you know, there's a lot of, if you're in a, say, I'm a deputy head at a one form entry school, that's a lot of time for one person to do that. And obviously, if you're in a more than a one form entry school, you just have that compounding factor of, you know, more bodies. So save yourself a lot of time.
Definitely. I mean, and that's always welcome. I mean, I think what we need to be careful, because like I said, about children's secretarial skills, lots of those children won't be able to read. You know, because we were always talking about phonics in year three, and, you know, this push on, I mean, obviously, it would be in an ideal world, all of our pupils have got the secretarial skills necessary to do things like take part in tests. I mean, obviously, that's not what the skills are for, but they are a barrier when they're absent.
You know?
If we want some picture of how pupils are doing, I don't think the answer is giving them a test like we would in year 3, 4, and 5. You know, sometimes we get the optional SATs, don't we? What I think will be good is designing a task or a set of 5 tasks that draw on the things that we think are important. And so, for instance, you could say that a pupil engaging with this task has got an awareness of X, Y, and Z, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So think about the school where they're going to think, okay, well, let's buy another test. I think better use of time would be to design, you know, and this might take time, and it might take groups of schools to get together and put their heads together. But I think with 5 carefully written tasks, you could generally get a picture of where a pupil is at.
Yeah.
Because the things that they couldn't do within the task would depend on certain bits of mathematics, you know? I mean, that's what I'm thinking might be worth doing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think anything formal should happen, and I'm totally with you. I'm on board. And I think teachers have got a clippable moment there where they can just play it to their head teacher. Well, here's why we shouldn't just make the same mistake that we made in 2012. Or, well, I think most schools sort of dug their heels in and made the mistake in 2016, reinventing levels. I think really well-designed task can draw out lots of bits of mathematics. I mean, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I like the idea. It's a good thing you work for a maths company.
Yeah, indeed.
Giving yourself more work to do.
It's fine. The time. I mean, the thing is, this is all really enjoyable stuff, designing questions that can...
No, and I could see it kind of working almost like the reception baseline, just one-to-one for 10 minutes. Like, and you're there with an iPad or some device, whatever, just inputting... Can they access this? Yes or no? Something like that, maybe. Be nice. I can see that working. As long as I get my number bomb check, I don't really care.
Are you going to make your own number bomb check?
No. I think I'm sure your paymasters won't tell you off. If I rep another mass, if I rep another admirable small business, which is called Number Sense Maths, who were, I'm not going to say ahead of the game, because everything that we're kind of advocating for was sort of present in the way back when we had the national strategies, because there is a beautiful, beautiful document about mental maths methods within the primary school. If you Google it, national strategies, mental maths methods, it'll be one of the first hits that are there. And it kind of just outlines the kind of methods that you would use, the expectations of what each year group was. Now, this was old money in the sense, so now kind of the expectations of, and when you look at that, you realize, okay, when Gove had his way with the curriculum, they just said, well, what if we made the year two expectations the year one expectations, and just kind of, they just literally notched everything down one, which I probably, until I kind of revisited that document again recently, probably didn't quite appreciate just how simple that was. It was just, yeah, let's just move everything down a year group, and then we can say, haha, we are the party of, you know, high standards, and you know, we really care about what children are learning and stuff like that. So ever since that went, the kind of focus on mental methods disappeared completely. And it really, what I mean, it felt like to me, Kieran, you may say otherwise, because I didn't know any better at the time, but it really did feel like as soon as the new maths curriculum came in, like all of that kind of stuff just was like, whoosh, cut, we don't have time to do any of that anymore, let's get rid of it. But Number Sense Maths, they kind of realized that there was purpose and reason for doing that, so they carried on doing it. So they made a really nice scope and sequence. They kind of market it, which I think is right, as almost like the phonics of mathematics teaching, where it's just meant to be like a 15 minute session that almost sits separate to your main math session. All the resources are there. It's kind of, I think it's really high impact, not much effort for the teachers, because it's usually just based on playing a video which shows some animations of how things work. It's got your subitizing in there as well. So, you know, this is one of the few actual schemes of work out there that actually says, you know, we're going to dedicate a whole block of several weeks to just making sure that pupils have the opportunity to perceptually and conceptually subitize. And then they just take you through the way that they've organized the methods, the number facts themselves. I think it's quite clever in the sense it's not just, okay, now let's just work on, you know, 2 + 3 for this week. They take you through it. They think, no, these are the methods that we think are best suited to teach these number facts. So obviously you've got your doubles, your near doubles, et cetera, you're bridging through 10. And kind of from there, then they have a worksheet generator that you can just generate. I think it's up to like 45 questions. So you can kind of select which, so it's not like all or nothing. You can be quite granular and then, oh, if I've just taught doubles, I just want 45 questions that are just doubles. If I've taught doubles and near doubles, I want 45 questions that are both doubles, near doubles, and their related subtraction fact. So I think in my head, I was going to do one 45 minute question set, which was just number bonds within 10, like that. And then the other one was 11 to 20 with related subtraction throughout. So that's, you know, 90 questions, which I think would give you a fair indication of student ability. I'd time it as well. I want them to know them off by heart. It's not like here's 30 minutes, take as long as you want to work it out. It's there to make sure it's not cogging up working memory. I think I did the maths, it would work out as a, like, I think it's like 5 minutes per paper, if that's what you wanted, for 45 questions, which, you know, doesn't seem a lot or particularly stressful. And you can imagine, you know, doing that throughout the year as they practice to, you know, get used to it, and it just becomes, you know, the big one that you do at the end. What else would I do? I probably wouldn't have it online. I think it's at that stage, I think the online nature of it probably reduces the validity of it, because kids are probably wondering about, you know, fingers and dexterity and all of that thing. They're still growing, and it probably takes far too long to actually, you know, input something than it's actually worth using. And obviously if they practice more on that, then they're writing less, and at that stage, you know, writing stamina and all of that good stuff kind of needs to be, I think, you know, kept sacrosanct. I think it's so important that kids are writing with pen and paper or pencil and paper. So yeah, it might mean a bit more marking, but it's 90 questions of number bonds within 20. I don't think it's going to be a massive impact. And I think at that stage, by the end of year two, you could probably teach them to self-assess that quite easily. I think, you know, pencils down, green pens out, let's go through the answers, tick, 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 tick. I've certainly been able to teach. Well, I've certainly seen it happen in year two. I've certainly been able to teach year three children within, you know, the first couple of weeks of September that this is how we mark some work. So yeah, I think that's what I'd do. It would be straight, you know, calculation, so I wouldn't have any images or there to support them. It would just be, you know, 9 + 1 is 16 + 3 is, etc., etc.
Was it teaching children to calculate mentally that you were talking about? Is that the name of the document?
It was indeed, yeah, teaching children to calculate mentally. If you, I say, I literally typed in mental maths, primary national strategies, and then it's our good friends at dira.ioe.ac.uk who have a PDF to access it.
Nice. And now there's an alarm going off on your school computer alerting the government that you've been checking out the old national strategies. So, you
know, and Neil is no longer available to do any DIDAPE.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right about the computers, you know, not least because next year's MTC will be done on an operating system that hasn't yet been invented if the updates continue at the current pace.
Fuming.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, I don't know a single school that is that up to date all the time, you know. But Oscar used to get, it's only really about halfway through this year, despite knowing all his times tables, that he has been not frustrated whenever doing like rock stars and things.
Yeah.
Because he wants to do it as fast as he can. And he knows them really well. But he's always behind the year 4s, 5s, and 6s because...
Yeah, dexterity.
Back when the national curriculum changed, you mentioned, you know, what was it like? It felt like no one had read the aims for a long time. So I remember spending a lot of time going that reasoning, fluency, and problem solving underpin this whole document, because there was a lot of chat about how it was this big list of knowledge. But the aims are laudable aims, you know? And then the next bit of the conversation was about, well, it's not reasoning and fluency and problem solving. It's all of this together. So yeah, it was a slow process. That's what I remember the change being slow. Like I say, we adopted it pretty early on in lots of classes, you know, because we saw a draft in 2012, 2013, and it didn't really change in 14. But I do know schools who still weren't using it in 2016.
Wow.
You know, the schools were, for one reason or another, slow to react to the like you said, the raised expectations, inverted commas, and the shift. It was as if, you know, this isn't happening. And then eventually, you know, when the 2016 stats happened, everyone who had not yet sort of got on board got a bit of a shock. So it'll be interesting to see what does happen, because I don't think we do change well. But I think you had a super thread. I mean, I purposely didn't read your thread again, because I didn't want it to influence my answers. Because no point in us sitting here, oh, I think this, and oh, yeah, I've already said that in my thread. Yes, I think that too. I think your thread hit the nail on the head, as far as I remember, in terms of this is a big chance for schools to do things right. What do you think they should avoid?
Obviously, if you are going to, as I mentioned it, if you are going to take a sledgehammer to your curriculum, I don't think it would be fair necessarily that the only diet that pupils got of mathematics between, you know, reception year one and year two is just purely number. Not sure how you feel about that, Karen. You may think, oh no, that's exactly what maybe that's the point of contention here, and that's where we are going to get a bit of disagreement between us. But I can't imagine that purely just having number would be the best thing for pupils. I'm not wedded to that idea. I'm happy to be persuaded else somehow. I think they should avoid trying to go to, I can imagine many providers, educational mathematical providers will now attempt to fill that void, perhaps. I'm assuming, I've not heard either way, that they're not going to be able to give you a scaled score as such of doing the SATs. So I can imagine that some head teachers may want to, and I could understand the reasons why, some sort of standardization test at the end of year two that does, you know, give you an idea, or that is like norm reference, so that you can kind of work out where your children are against a wider sample of the population. So I know obviously White Rose are working with Smart Grade, I believe the company is, that will kind of offer these standardized tests. I think that should be something to be avoided, because again, it just comes up to the, well, you're just replacing it. It's just like for like, really. So definitely avoid that. And I say there are plenty of other things that they should avoid when it comes to other subjects, but I'm going to keep those in my pocket later on until we talk about various other bits and pieces. But I think those are my kind of like main two. Obviously, you know, I feel like we're quite good at going to extremes. We never really go to the center ground. So I think, you know, one extreme is, you know, throw the whole maths curriculum out and let's just say, oh yeah, you're only going to do number from, you know, in year one, in key stage one, versus, you know, not doing the SATs, but thinking about, okay, let's buy in a third party assessment, which kind of tries to standardize something, which means that effectively, and if a company brings them out for one subject, they're going to bring them out for the other two that's been replaced as well. So effectively you're actually spending money now on something that used to happen that you used to get for free. And was it really any use? Again, I think the jury's still quite out on that.
Yeah, and as it won't be standardized, it'll probably guaranteed to be of less use. I mean, for me, you know, I know that I, like you say, veer towards the extreme and really reducing things down and slimline and stuff. But we know that mathematics is best taught when the interconnected nature of mathematics is drawn on, you know. So there's no way you could possibly only do the arithmetic side. People just wouldn't have a round enough experience. I think my view has always been, let's be sensible about the things that we do expect pupils to do. And we've already mentioned the stuff we would cut, but I don't think that's going to impoverish pupils' experience, you know, because, you know, as they go through school, as they go through QCH1, that core number, not that number sense, as you say, opens the door into all the other areas, you know, and opened, and it's like a key that you use to unlock various different doors. And so, yeah, I'm totally with you. You know, no one is for a second saying that we should just cut everything and just teach number sense, but hopefully it can get the position it serves, and hopefully mental methods can get the position it serves, and then the arithmetic structures can get the position they deserve. Because absolutely. Yeah, the worst thing to happen would be for us just to replace it with like something that isn't free but does exactly the same thing worse. But only time will tell. What's your prediction for 24 months time? So let's give it a year. Everybody get a year to settle, get on board, and then everybody does something the second year.
Yeah, I don't think many schools will do much next year about it. I just think, say, we're in summer two now. If they haven't been thinking about it for a while, it's unlikely that many things will change for next year, and the year after that. The general election will definitely have happened by then, won't it, in 2 years' time? Yeah, general election has to happen next year. So 24 months' time, hoping a change of government. I can't see Labour bringing it back in, quite honestly. So I think if Labour get in, they'll be too busy thinking about how we can put 21st century skills in it, and we'll be thinking about how we can sugarcoat 21st century skills into our curriculum without really changing much at all. We might have to change the word procedural knowledge to skill, and then go, ah, there's our skills right there.
Yeah, it'll be a very interesting time for the podcast.
Yeah, because
it is difficult as a left-leaning group of teachers. I mean, most teachers are left-leaning, aren't they, in some respect, left to center, to challenge a sort of center-right government without seeming like it's on political grounds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because our interest is in education. This is not a political podcast. You know, I doubt any of our listeners could explain what my politics were, because we keep it quite close to our chest.
I think that should be the name of this episode. This is not a political podcast.
But it'll be easier to challenge them when it's not as clear that it's on political grounds and it's just on educational grounds. Unless then people start saying that we're center-right. And, you know, because teachers do get swept with that brush, don't they, when they make challenges.
Oh, if you support, and I am a supporter of many, not all, but, you know, quite a few of the Govian reforms. A lefty trad is, I think, the terminology that's used on Twitter every now and then. Someone who is left-leaning in their politics, but, quote-unquote, traditional teacher, which, for whatever reason, sort of gets tarnished with the right. And again, you know, if that's the case, then I pity, you know, Chris Such, because he'll be a fascist by that point, because anyone's any advocate of phonics by that point will definitely be tarnished as a as some sort of alt-right wing fascist, and say for their support of phonics. And Chris is definitely the least fascist person that I know.
Well, you say that, but I've got a folder of stuff, you know, that I couldn't put in episodes. And if he ever wrongs me,
I know we're all doing like mutually assured destruction, right? This is starting to get a little bit more political, but the more we talk, the more we go on.
Yeah, I mean, it's time to call it a close until we explore the other two subjects in the very near future. I mean, certainly before the end of this term, I reckon. We can look at those. I mean, 24 months time, I think, yeah, stagnation next year. And then I imagine, you know, sadly, I think we may have just reinvented the wheel. But let's track it over the next. So what are we on? We're the 7th of June today. Let's track the situation over the next 2 years and we'll come back to this and see how we get on. Because it is a big opportunity for the profession to say we are professional. We know what's best for our kids. We don't need to do things that are less than effective for them and waste our time with an opportunity cost. So all I have to do is say thank you very much for joining me. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you very much for having me.
Happy Pride to everyone who's listening. Hope you've had a really good month. And to everyone at home, until next time, thanks for listening.